Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for the sixth episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you would, please take the time to drop a like, a comment, a subscribe, or even some feedback. We'd appreciate that. Got special guests on this episode include Super Nanny Joe Frost, actress Caroline Aaron, Texas country singer-songwriter Joshua Ray Walker, also author Omid Scobie, and from Impractical Jokers, Joe Gatto. Our first guest, probably known best simply as the Super Nanny. A new season of episodes premieres on September 1st, and we'll talk about that along with some of the many issues that she's seeing families dealing with as they return to school, whether that be virtual or in person. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to be back on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Now we have talked about the quarantine, about COVID-19 and the shutdown and the quarantining. Well, now we're returning to school, so that brings up a whole new set of circumstances, plus the return of Super Nanny. So there's a little bit to talk about today, right?
Yeah, you're not wrong there.
Now, during the quarantine, obviously everybody was trying to figure out what they were going to do to keep themselves entertained. Now, as we go back to school, whether that be virtual or in person, what do you see as being the biggest issues we're gonna be facing as we come out of the quarantine we've been in?
Well, we're still in it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly.
Know, mm-hmm. You know, make no mistake. I mean, I don't want people to take their foot off the pedal. We still have to make sure that we're keeping safe, that we're wearing our masks, that we're protecting ourselves and protecting others. But what we have seen is ourselves psychologically go from phase one into phase two. It was panic. We really weren't being given the kind of information that we needed from the top. You know, we're reading in between the lines. We're listening to the scientists. Now we've got kids going back to school, and we have some doing distance learning. And again, it is going to pose with parents working how we manage to be able to facilitate that, because we've got those teachers out there doing the best that they can with their own families. And I think it's important that we remember that we're not robots. We are human beings. You know, let's lower our expectations and not keep looking for an A+, and recognize that we're going to do the best that we actually can in being able to make sure that we can prioritize our kids' education, you know, manage our home, make sure we can continue to communicate well. So I do think it's important to have a flexible routine, because that does keep the infrastructure at home and the cornerstones met and everybody on task, doing their bit, coming together. I think it's important to reach out to friends. I mean, right now I'm hearing from parents that are worried about algebra and, you know, how kids are learning these days are very different to their own. And I'm like, you know, you only know what you know. You know, having those contacts with those teachers, making sure that you can be in contact with other parents, put your hands up. This is no ego attached here. I haven't got a clue. How do we do this? Or teaching our own teenagers to have resources themselves, you know, and to be able to do that with their own friends online. It's also making sure that we can facilitate family wellness every day and be mindful of that. So there are families that have not been getting out as much. And what I will say is those brisk walks, those bike rides, getting out in the natural fresh air, getting that sunlight, we need that. We need that for our mental health. Otherwise, things start to deteriorate with how we think, our thoughts, followed by our actions. And this is all bite-sized, tangible things that we can do to be able to just, you know, keep us afloat and make us feel like we're managing and not feel so overwhelmed.
That's right. And like we mentioned, the return of all new episodes of Super Nanny coming up on Saturday, September 1st on Lifetime. And have things changed as far as some of the main issues you're having to be brought in for? Or is it just the same kind of issues that folks are having to deal with, but maybe new priorities, if you will?
This was before COVID, but make no mistake, we're dealing with love, betrayal, trust, parenting issues, and a lot of sticky mess going on here with these families in this season, that starts to unravel itself even when I'm in the home. So get your notepads out and you're in for a ride, because I certainly was, that's for sure. You're going to see that when you watch.
And Joe, also another question. We always seem to, everybody talks about the negatives of the quarantine, of social distancing, but what are maybe some of the positives that we've learned from this that we can take forward as we return to whatever that new normal is?
Well, thank you for asking that question, because this is not to minimize the impact of the pandemic, but there are some blessings. You know, there is a gift in being able to recognize what truly is important to your family and prioritizing that, and actually creating new practices and rituals that moving forward into the new year, we hope will best serve families. So, you know, I do believe that, again, the gratitude, right, of where we are today and being able to recognize that, surrendering and letting go of what we can't control. And I think it's given an opportunity for families to talk, to not escape, not to use the excuse of, well, I can't, I'm working late, we're passing ships, we don't have time, the kids are out all the time. You know, this is a moment now where it's in front of your face and you can't escape from it. So I do believe, you know, that healthy communication, that deeper connection with families, those new practices, I mean, how we move forward will best serve our family.
That's right. And again, new episodes of Super Nanny Saturday, September 1st on Lifetime. And Joe, always want to make sure and let everybody know where they can keep up with everything you've got going on social media wise as well.
Yeah, it's important, because I'm actually doing private consultation for companies as well as for families. And that's joefrost.com. If you go to that website, there's the home.
There you go. Well, Joe, always great to visit with you. I appreciate your time and hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. You too. Take care. Stay safe.
Find out about all of her information about the shows, social media, all that at joefrost.com. Next up, I had the chance to visit with actress Caroline Aaron, who you know currently from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, along with such titles as Sleepless in Seattle, 21 and 22 Jump Street. We're going to visit about her upcoming movie release, Call Waiting. Caroline, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, I'm delighted. I'm so delighted. The only way we can travel now.
That's right. And obviously, the marvelous Miss Maisel has just been an unbelievable crowd and critic favorite so far. And season 3 streaming now, up for all kinds of awards. But really, I want to talk about the upcoming film Call Waiting. I'm excited to talk about this. Tell our listeners a little bit about the backstory of Call Waiting.
Well, it's very interesting. Call Waiting was a play that I did in Los Angeles, and it was an enormous hit. It is a one-character play. It was the playwright's story. It's about a woman who is bedridden, and she stays not with anything that is life-threatening, but with pain, and she talks on the phone the entire day. And the conceit of the writer was, if you just listen to a person's, their side of a phone calls throughout a 24-hour period, by the end of the day, you'd know everything about them. So the character talks to 18 different people during the course of the play, and you meet everybody in her family and in her world. And the play was such an enormous hit. The filmmaker Don Ruse came to see it, who had directed the film The Opposite of Sex, and he said, I want to make this into a movie. And I thought for sure he would open it up and we would meet her mother and her sister and all of these different characters in her life. But in fact, he said, I want to keep the conceit the same. But in a film, he taught me, which I didn't know, he said, you know, when you go to the theater, you look at the back wall, you look at the furniture, you look at all kinds of different things as you're looking at the actors. And he said, but in a movie, that's called editing. The movie tells you where to look. He said, so we have to have something to cut to, so we need another character. So they wrote another character for me to play, so I play both characters in the film, the actress who's playing the fictional character in Call Waiting, and the lead character of Call Waiting. Of course, it's called Call Waiting because it takes place in the 90s in L.A., and that's when we used to have Call Waiting. We don't have that anymore so much as we used to. And it's the playwright's story. She was born in displaced persons, and she grew up in a family of four. She had an older sister. And when they were young adult women, the older sister found out that her father was not her father, that her biological father had died in the camps. Her mother had married her husband's brother, which was not unusual at the time. They came to America and lived as one family. And then when the older sister found out that this information had been withheld from her, she never spoke to her family again. And believe it or not, it's a comedy, even though that's the story. And it's really a wonderful, wonderful piece that really captured a lot of hearts when it was live on stage. So I'm excited for it come out in the theater so you can see it as a film.
That's right. And seeing this release and especially the timeliness of it, I just love the part of one of my biggest things I always say is if we're going to make a change and a difference in other people, you got to have conversation. And that also, it's not only talking, but it's also listening to what others have to say as well.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's very interesting from having done this, how we don't even realize how much we change depending on who we're talking to. If you're talking to your mother, talking to a policeman, or you're talking to a salesperson, all kinds of different people come out of you. So that has been sort of a really exciting and challenging part of doing this particular play. And the playwright who I became very close to because the material was so personal, unfortunately died young last year. And so I'm so excited for people to be able to see this story.
And you talked about doing this on the stage, and what, as a one person stage adaptation, how do you get yourself mentally prepared to get up there and do it all, if you will? That's something I've always wondered.
Well, in this particular case, when we were getting ready to start previews, I wasn't ready. You know, it was, you know, in some ways it wasn't even just stage fright, because ultimately it was an 85-page monologue and there's nobody else you can rely on. So I would get to a certain place where, you know, I would say, hold on, someone's beeping, and I couldn't remember who was on the next phone call because I had no one to kind of feed me what the next event was going to be in the play. And I just said to the producers, I just need some more time. And the play is such a ride, the story is such a ride, that once you get on this ride, it sort of carries you. It's really, you know, it's really amazing how when there's all those people looking at you and you're on the stage, it makes you feel like you have to tuck into your imagination in a really tight way so that you don't take in the fact that everyone's staring at you. You know, you have to let your imagination take you over.
That's right. And again, the new film, Call Waiting, is going to be available Labor Day weekend. Is that right, Caroline?
Labor Day weekend on Amazon.
All right. Well, looking forward to that. And Caroline, hope you have a great rest of your week. And hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Yes, and you stay safe.
My next guest is a Texas country singer-songwriter, Joshua Ray Walker. This is my first visit as I get to know a little bit more about Joshua.
Joshua, thanks for your time this morning, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Now, Joshua, I know last week pretty hectic, pretty busy for you. What kind of exciting week did you have last week, and looking forward to this week?
Well, you know, the record just came out back in July, so I'm still, you know, working radio and stuff. So I've been doing, you know, a ton of radio interviews, and I've had a lot of, which is great. I love, you know, getting to talk to the people who are spinning my record. I really appreciate it. And lots of good press are, you know, still coming out. I had a KERA piece come out, and yeah, it's just seeing these reviews for my record was really gratifying, and you know, it just feels really good. I was worried about maybe having a sophomore slump, or you know, I was worried about putting out a record in the middle of a pandemic, but so far it's going pretty great.
Now, with the pandemic in mind, I mean, obviously everybody's had to change the way they do things, and coming in, like you mentioned, the sophomore album. What was the biggest thing that you noticed that had to be different along with the pandemic? Now,
I mean, without question, it's the fact that I can't tour this record. You know, that's how, you know, you bring the songs to life and you show them to people and you get them excited. It's at live shows and you interact with the fans, and, you know, you make a fan for every 1,000 handshakes, you know, and I can't get out there and do that. So I've had to be way more active on social media and just a little bit more creative in the marketing for this record, you know, so that it actually gets to people.
Now, what were maybe some of the things that you were looking forward to implementing that you learned from the release of the first album that obviously things have had to change because of this?
Like I said, just better social media coverage. Before I started putting music out, I didn't really have a social media presence. I didn't use it all that much. And so there was a big learning curve there, figuring out how to, you have to do more than just post stuff, you know, you got to learn your audience and whatever. So I definitely got better at that between album one and album two. Just trying to be comfortable and sincere online. I've been doing a lot of live streaming and, you just got to get on there and hang out with fans and talk, and which is great. You know, I'm all about that in person, but trying to do that to a camera in your bedroom is pretty weird.
Some people do it for a living. I'm just saying.
Yeah, true.
Now, Joshua, tell us about the album. What the biggest inspirations leading up to the album, and what you hope for the listeners to be able to glean from it.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted this album to sound like, you know, you just walked into a great house party. The first album, I wanted to showcase my songwriting, and it was pretty, you know, downtrodden. It was a lot of ballads, which is great. But when I went out to tour the record, I was opening up for, you know, American Aquarium and Shooter Jennings and Wade Bowen and a lot of, you know, Charlie Crockett, high energy acts. And going out there and sitting on a stool and playing my sad songs, I eventually won over the audiences, but, people want to go out and dance and drink and have a good time. So I wanted to write an album that would kind of round out my live set. And I feel like we accomplished that. This second album has got a lot of upbeat stuff on it. And a lot of, you know, kind of honky tonk arrangements, lots of fiddle, pedal steel, you know, it's, just a fun record.
Now, when you're putting instrumentation together, I mean, what's the one instrument that you have the hardest time finding a place for it to fit?
Oh, man, I don't know. I'd say I have the opposite problem. John Pedigo, my producer, and I, we kind of kitchen sink a lot of the songs. So, like, there's a song on the record called One Trick Pony that I think has everything that played on the record all on one song. It's got trumpets and accordion and grand piano and organ and, you know, jaw harp. I mean, it's got everything on it. So I don't have a hard time placing anything. I kind of have the opposite problem.
Now, again, the new album, Glad You Made It, is available now. Joshua, I want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can get the album, where they can see the tour dates as those come out, and keep up with that social media presence you were talking about as well.
Sure. You can find my album on CD and vinyl. You can find the first album as well at statefairrecords.com. That's my the label that I'm on. That's their website. You can also find my merch through my website, joshuaraywalker.com, and follow along with my tour schedule there. And if you want to follow me on social media, it's just at Joshua Ray Walker on all platforms except Twitter, because someone stole my handle and got banned from Twitter. So on Twitter, it's at Ray Walker Joshua. And you can also find me on all streaming platforms under my full name as well.
All right. And Joshua, wanted to give you an opportunity to give our listeners a little heads up on the new single as well.
Sure. This is actually a pretty old song of mine. I found a button in my deceased grandfather's house as we were helping his estate, you know, move out when I was in high school. And it said, "I rode the bull at Bronco Billy's." And I just kind of always kept it around, and one day I started writing a song around it, and I ended up writing about 5 songs about it, about this honky-tonk closing in South Dallas. And Bronco Billy's was the lead, you know, single that came out of that, and, I said I wanted this album to sound like a party, and when we recorded this, we actually recorded all the rhythm tracks in Dallas, and then we took those to Nashville, and I invited a bunch of my friends out. And we stocked the fridge with beer and food and pulled all the mattresses out of the bedrooms of this Airbnb and made a makeshift studio in the living room. And so you can actually hear people, you know, moving around and, you know, given some yips and yeehaws in the background, and that's because we were standing, you know, a big group of us in the living room of this house while Adam Ditch Kurtz was cutting steel, and Mallory Eagle was there singing backup harmony. We just had one mic in the middle of the room, so you get a lot of the... There's actually a house party going on in the recording of this track, Bronco Billy.
Again, find more information about his socials, tour dates, music, and more online at www.joshuaraywalker.com. Up next is author and friend of the show, Omid Scobie, whose new book is entitled Finding Freedom, Harry and Meghan in the Making of a Modern Royal Family.
Omid, first off, thank you so much for the time again.
It's great to chat with you again, Cameron.
And I know that we've got the new book, Finding Freedom, to talk about. And Omid, did you see, when were the first early signs for you as you're around the royals so much? Harry and Meghan split thing from the royal family, when were the first signs for you?
It's interesting because you see a lot of the British tabloid stories suggest that this decision almost blindsided members of the royal family. But actually, the signs were there very early on. I think Harry and Meghan really struggled with the reality of the situation they're in when Meghan was pregnant with Archie. And it was a time when I think Meghan was particularly up against it with sections of the press here in the UK, and when they wanted or needed to be defended and supported by the institution of the monarchy, they found that time and time again that support was not there, and this no comment policy that the royal family sort of really sticks to was actually doing the well-being of both Harry and Meghan a lot of harm, and they felt quite alone in those moments. And I think these are really those times when they first began to discuss what life could be like outside of palace walls.
And what do you think the biggest misconception of folks as Harry and Meghan left the royal family in Britain, what do you think the biggest misconception of what their life is to be?
I mean, I think the biggest misconception we've seen with this decision is the fact that Meghan was the one supposedly that influenced Harry to do it. And I think that anyone that's followed this story for long enough should know that this was almost inevitable for Harry. I think he's long dreamt of a life outside the royal fishbowl. Even myself, I've had conversations with Harry over the years about how great he feels in places in the world where they don't even really know that he's a prince. I think Harry's always at his best when he isn't just Harry or Captain Wales in the military veteran community. And so I think that when he was in this position that he had to protect his wife and his child or his forthcoming child, that was really when this instinct kicked in that he must pull them away from this situation that he could see growing. Let's not forget, he saw exactly what happened to his mother when not enough was done to protect her. And I think he really wanted to make sure that that didn't happen to those that are around him. So that misconception that Meghan really was in the driver's seat for this couldn't be further from the truth.
And where, now that we're farther down the road, where do you see them emotionally adapting, if you will?
It's been interesting because, of course, you know, Harry and Meghan are a couple that like to hit the ground running and get straight to work. And of course, the pandemic that we all face at the moment provides us with unique challenges that has changed the way in which we all live. And that's seen Harry and Meghan almost virtually stuck within the walls of their home since setting up their base in California. That hasn't, however, stopped them from really using their voices in a way that we haven't seen them do as working members of the royal family. We saw Meghan for the past few weeks speaking very openly about the importance of voting and speaking out to women and different minority groups about the importance of getting that vote out there. I think for Harry, seeing him speak publicly about systemic racism with an American civil rights leader, this again is something we never would have seen if he was a working member of the royal family, because it just sort of crosses those lines of what's considered perhaps politically sensitive for royal family members to get involved in. So this freedom that they now have to express themselves in the ways that they do, that they've always wanted to, within the safe environment that they've created for Archie, is exactly what they wanted.
And the byline of the book says the making of a modern royal family. And Omid, do you see things changing at all because of how things went down with Meghan and Harry as well?
It'll be interesting to see what happens in the future, because of course I remember when the Duchess of Cambridge, when Kate first married into the royal family, and many royal palace staff told me that they've really learned from lessons of the past, and the past being, of course, Diana's tragic story. And in a way, we saw things very different with Kate. And then, of course, Meghan married Harry, and it felt like we were facing a lot of the same difficulties that we had seen Diana go through as a member of the royal family. So it'll be interesting to see if lessons are learned from this. And it's why I felt the book was very important to have a version of the story that reflects Harry and Meghan's feelings out there, because I think so few people, due to a lot of the tabloid coverage, have really seen what they've had to deal with and what led them to make the decisions that they did.
And again, that new book, Finding Freedom, Harry and Meghan and the Making of a Modern Royal Family. Omid, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can find out more information about the book and everything else you've got going on as well.
Well, you can check out everything about the book at hc.com/findingfreedom. You can find me on Twitter at Scoby. And I have a few things in the works, but very much focused on the book now. But I can't wait to talk to you about those other things in the future, Cam.
All right. Well, Omid, always great to visit with you. I hope you have a great rest of your week, my friend.
Have a great day.
Again, keep up with all of his socials at Scoby. Our final guest is Joe Gatto, who we've all come to know and love on Impractical Jokers. We'll visit about his new book, The Dog Father, which is now available everywhere.
Joe, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, I appreciate you, Cameron. Thanks for the support, bud.
Now, the book, Dog Father, this is something, you know, I didn't realize while watching the show that you had the affinity for dogs that you do. And when did this first start for you in your life?
I started adopting, really my wife and I'm married 7 years now, and we had gotten our first dog, Cannoli. All my dogs are named after desserts. I have Cannoli, Biscotti, Tartufo, Zeppoli, Spumoni, Pignoli, Napoleon, and Mishkin. So all my dogs have a name of desserts. When we had gotten Cannoli, we had bought her, and she had a lot of health issues and stuff, and it really opened our eyes to puppy mills and, you know, what's going on in that world of shelter animals. And so we decided to start rescuing, and it really was just addicting to get the love of these rescue dogs, and they've, you know, really make a difference in their lives. And we just started down the path, and here we are. I got a pack of Gatto pups, and I live in basically a little zoo. It's great.
Now, the personal side of things for you, talking about the dogs and being the alpha male of the home, I know this firsthand myself as well. And how hard was each one of them to break? I know that they're all different as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because they all. It's funny because people ask me, you know, isn't it hard to get, once you have two, you're getting three, then you get three, I'll just get four, and you just build the pack. I find it very easy with the pack because they take cues from each other, and Biscotti, who's my favorite, is actually the mama bear of the group, so it's kind of, if she accepts me, they just all fall in line, so it's been pretty good. They all have gotten along, and they all fall in line pretty well. You know, one is a puppy, so, you know, Napoleon is just a year old, so he gets a little bit of trouble, but, you know, chewing and a little bit of accidents here and there. But besides that, everybody's good.
Now, what maybe was the biggest eye-opener about the shelter dogs, and as opposed to dealing with the puppy mills and your emphasis on wanting to make sure to keep those shelter dogs getting adopted, if you will?
I think it was the transformation that you witnessed between these dogs and the stories that you hear. So one of my dogs, Spumoni, my littlest one, I actually adopted it on the road. We were in Vegas touring with the Jokers, and I got interviewed and by this foundation called Love Pup, who are a great foundation and basically have a very smart marketing model where they ask celebrities to take pictures of dogs that are available with dogs that are available for adoption and put them on their social media to spread awareness of these dogs. And Spumoni actually fell asleep on my lap during the interview, and I was like, okay, I'm taking this one with me. And I basically adopted her on the spot. She spent the weekend with me touring, and I brought her home to my wife, who was sitting with our five-month-old son, and I brought home a five-month-old puppy, and she's like, what are you doing?
And so we talk about the love of dogs, obviously, in the book, but also the love of food. And Joe, for you, how important was it for each of the dogs to be named after a dessert? Where did that come from in the first place?
It started as a joke. My wife, I was like, you get to pick them, I get to name them. And then we started going down the path, and I was like, oh, it's kind of fun that they're all named. We named the first one cannoli because that's my favorite dessert, and I love the dog. And I was like, oh, that's cute. We'll name this one cannoli. And then we got biscotti, and I was like, what if we just keep naming them after Italian desserts or after desserts? And we just, because you'll never run out of names. I can't wait to get New York cheesecake. That's going to be a fun dog.
It has issues, though. Again, Joe, I sure want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can find out more information about the Dog Father and, of course, all that you've got going social media-wise as well.
Yeah, sure. You could get the book on Amazon, and then the website for the book is gattopups.com. That's my, that's my name of the pack. It's Gattopups. So that's the website there, and it tells you more about the book and also the link to get the book on Amazon.
So has there been an end number where you cannot go over this number? Has that ever been discussed yet?
You know what? I thought it was five. I thought five was the right number, and then I met Napoleon, and it turned into six. So I don't know. At this point, it's craziness.
Well, that's awesome. Again, the new book, The Dog Father. Joe, always great to visit with you, my friend. Hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Of course, you can tune in for more on Impractical Jokers in perpetuity on True TV. Also, follow him on his socials at Joe_Gatto. Thanks again for joining us for this episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dull. If you ever have a comment, questions, anything that you'd like to know, you can find me on Instagram, AKA_Cameron, on Twitter, Cameron Dull, and on my Facebook page, at Cameron Dull Altus. If you'd like to help out with the funding for this podcast, feel free to click on the support tab and follow the instructions.